You have questions. Find your answers at starspsychics.com.
Hello, I'm Natalie, owner of starspsychics.com. I am dedicated to providing affordable access to spiritual advisors. Here are two satisfied clients who will tell you what it's like to work with me.
Quoting Jackie.
It's a comfortable site. Everybody is so friendly. They treat you like family.
Barb added this about Natalie.
She's a kind and caring person who gives accurate readings.
You have questions? Find your answers today at starspsychics.com. That's stars with a Z, psychics.com. Hi, everyone. This is Natalie, also known as Starscast. Welcome you to another beautiful night with a beautiful guest. And first off, I want to remind everybody, you know, I always kind of get on my podium about this. I want everybody to be safe. Follow the rules of your state, city, whatever it is. We just found out from the county around here that there will be no in-school. I don't even know when they're going to go. It's going to be virtual because I'm in South Carolina, everybody knows, and it's just really getting bad here. And so I think it's a good thing, but follow the rules. Stay safe. Be careful. Remember that what you do affects somebody else, that affects somebody else, and it's just kind of like a chain reaction. So we have to always be careful, and be careful out there. Just please stay safe. Okay, so tonight I'm going to let you know, let everybody know, before I bring my guest on, about stars with a Z, psychics.com. It's been redone. The front is different, the main, as they call it. I call it the main. And it's I still got my blue. It's got some pretty colors. It's got green, and there's a little bit of a pink in it. Just little things, little changes. The pictures look better of all my readers. We're working on more things. You'll be surprised. And soon, and I don't know if it's going to be this week, but if you keep going back to the site, that starts with a Z, psychics.com, and you are a first-time client, you will be able to get 3 free minutes. No purchase necessary, 3 free minutes, one time only. And if you want to make a purchase at the same time, you can do that also. There'll be special rates in your account once you create it. And then once you do it one time, they disappear, and then it's back to regular rates. But I hope you keep taking a look at it. Go peek at it and see the changes. You're going to love it. Everybody loves it. I just sent a note out to my staff today. Letting them know. I mean, I'm sure they've been seeing it, and I got all these nice emails back. Oh, Natalie, it looks so nice. It's still me. You know, my color is that blue, and that's me. And Tony said, don't you want to really change it? And I said, well, we can change it, but it's got to have my blue. So, and also, Mystic Living Today is up. It went up on the 1st. I even added something last night, so it's not, you know, something that I don't do is if I get something last minute, I'll put it in, put the image in, and go to mysticlivingtoday.com. It's probably, I keep saying it's one of the biggest issues, but I really think this tops them all because I added so much. But, everybody knows I love it. So without further ado, I've talked enough. She's probably smiling over there thinking, God, is she ever going to be quiet? I want to bring my guest on tonight, and her name is Dr. Patty Ashley. Patty, how are you tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you, Natalie?
I'm great. Now, you know, I'm not going to call you doctor. I'm just going to call you Patty. But Patty has done extensive work with grief and trauma. And before we went on the air, we were just talking that this is a perfect time to discuss everybody's got some form of trauma in their life. I don't care what it is, having to stay in the house, worrying about your children, worrying about your parents, the grandparents, the payments, the this, the that. That's all trauma. Trauma comes probably, and she will tell us, in many forms. It's not just some major happening like a near-death experience or you almost got hit by a car. There's a lot of things that can be very, very traumatic. So, Patty, how did you get started in all of this? I mean, I know your father died suddenly of a heart attack, and you were very, very young, only 11. So did that set you off on your path? I'm sure you were very smart, even as a little girl. So did that start it all for you?
Well, that's funny that you say that, because I'll tell my story. I was curious about where my father went when I was told he was in heaven and I couldn't go there. So I was on a spiritual quest my whole entire life, and also a psychological curiosity around something really bad happened and nobody wants to talk about it. So I had a kind of a depression throughout middle and high school, and nobody really wanted it, which again was my grief. So I barely made it through high school. So I would say I am smart. However, when you've lost your father and you're going through trauma, sometimes your brain doesn't work as well as it can. So my story is I went to the guidance counselor in high school because I read a book called Dibs. It was about a play therapist, Virginia Axlin, who got this little boy to talk through play therapy. And I got very excited, and I go to the guidance counselor, and I said, I know what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be a psychologist. And she said, you're not smart enough for that.
Ah!
So it's funny when you said that when in the introduction that I'm smart. So, yes, I am smart enough for that because it took me long enough, but I finally arrived. So I took a little winding path then because I wasn't sure what I was going to do after high school, and I found that there was a special education program where you could work with children with emotional disorders. And I thought, well, it's a four-year program. I hear the job market's really good, and so last minute it went that route and still wanted to be a therapist. I felt like I was just putting a Band-Aid on the kids in the schools, and then I started having my own children and was fortunate enough to be able to stay home for a few years when they were small, and then got really curious about raising healthy children and not wanting to mess them up because I had learned so much about psychology. So I ended up doing parent support groups and met up with a mentor in Virginia who was really well known in the area for parent education. And she pretty much talked me into doing her early childhood education master's program and be her teaching assistant. So I took another little wind in the path to becoming a psychologist. But I ended up doing parent education for pediatric group for 5 years. And I still wanted to be a psychologist. So I ended up going back to school and getting my third degree in psychology. And I've been licensed here in Colorado now for 21 years. I moved across the country from Virginia when I was all but dissertation for various reasons. But yeah, that's my story. And I finally get to do the work that I knew I wanted to do in high school, but I was told I wasn't smart enough to do. So.
Yes. Somebody told me that one time, but it wasn't what I'm doing now. It was I actually, when I was in high school, just near the end of it, I wanted to be in medicine. I wanted to be a nurse. Well, you know, nobody went to nursing school. Nobody had the money to do anything. Anyways, I could never do that. So as I got older, I got close to these two doctors, and the one doctor said to me, you know, I had to assist him with something, with stitches, and I was really good at it. And he said, have you done this before? And I said, no, but I really like it. And he said, well, why don't you go into nursing? Well, I had a son. He wasn't that old, you know, and you know, it costs money. Well, you know, it costs money to do all that. But anyways, later on, because I went to him for many years, he told me, he said, you know, when I told you that, he said, I really wanted to say to you that you could be a doctor. He said, because you have something, a gift of taking care of, and which I take care of people all over the place right now. I don't do surgery on them, but I would have loved it. I think I would have been really good. But I think, and, you know, everybody, if I talk to my friends, oh, you're not smart enough to do that. Huh, really? Well, I bet you they don't own what I own either, you know? So I think we find our way, like you found your way. But, you know, you were talking about working with all these young children and the trauma that they have gone through. And, you know, you could really relate to them, right? I mean, here you were 11 years old and losing, you know, I know some people that have lost both parents when they were just like 7 and 8 years old. How in the world do they get through that, Patty?
You know, it's not easy because of how trauma affects the body and the nervous system. And I think, you know, that's the harder part. And we don't do grief really well in our country, even now when we're living in tremendous amounts of collective grief. I think we're being pushed to really take a look at what is grief, and, you know, what do we need in order to really grieve and move that energy out of the body so that we can move out and through it. We can't go around it. We have to go through it. And so we've lived in a culture of trying to go around things and avoiding and distracting. And I think this pandemic has really put people in a place of not being able to necessarily avoid and distract as much as they would like to. And everyone's trying to find ways to fix what's going on. But I have a friend who's a child psychiatrist, and, you know, we talk on the phone every night about, you know, what it's like, because
right.
her patients just want her to be able to fix things. And she said, I can't fix it. And
right.
I said, that's the lesson, isn't it? That we have to learn how to tolerate what is. We can't fix this. We have to tolerate the discomfort. And that's why we've avoided grief so much, is because we don't really like to be uncomfortable. But the truth is, it's part of the deal here, you know? And if we can get
uncomfortable. We all are.
We get to the other side. What's that?
I said we all are uncomfortable in some way, in something, either what we cannot do or what we have to do. Right now, you have to be really busy right now, are you? I mean, you've got to be a lot of people calling and people that you know, because it's like, well, how do I deal with this? I mean, I'm not used to staying home. See, I am. I work from home. But, I mean, there's many out there that are going cuckoo because, I shouldn't say cuckoo, but you know what I'm saying? They're floundering around because, oh, I got to get out. I got to go to a restaurant. I got to do this. I've been to the grocery store twice since March.
Got my hair cut twice.
And twice, yeah, but, you know, my son just lives down the road, and my daughter-in-law, and they are both, especially him, very adamant about me not going anywhere. Of course, I wear a mask, but I did get sick a few weeks ago. It wasn't COVID. It was a virus, though. Very sick. but the thing of it is that if you're not used to staying home, and you probably hear this all the time, people are saying, well, I don't know how to deal with this. I'm used to going to work and being there all day and then coming home. I mean, and I'm used to being able to pay for things. And, you know, that's what really bothers me, Patty. Talk about trauma is these people that are, and probably you as well, and all the other therapists and all the other people that are in the field, these people that all of a sudden they can't pay for things, and it's embarrassing. I mean, they have no idea. People have no idea what some of these people are going through. I'm an empath, and I feel it, and I really don't like it. I wish I could fix it. I really do, but we can't fix it. Nobody can fix it. It's going to be a process. And so if somebody calls or talks to you, what do you tell them about, you know, if they say, well, you know, I'm barely surviving, or they're surviving, but they're really not emotionally, psychologically, they're kind of running around in circles. What do you tell these people? I mean, that's traumatic for them, right? I mean, I'm sure I'm right about that.
Yeah, so what I've noticed is it's as if the majority, if not all of us, are in a PTSD response, post-traumatic stress disorder. And the thing with what we've learned studying PTSD is that the body memory doesn't have any time. So if we've had trauma in our lives, it gets activated in present time, stressful and or traumatic situation. So I would say this is definitely trauma. You know, when you're talking about the different types of trauma, you know, we talk about what they call big T's and little T's, and I think we have a variation of all of the above here, you know, traumas and the little traumas. And nonetheless, we're all in grief because we've had to give up what we were familiar with for the most part in our life and make a lot of a lot of changes. And, of course, there's the grief around people who are actually dying, which is devastating.
Right.
And people who are dying in care of their family. And, I mean, the types of trauma and the levels of trauma are astronomical. And so what's happening for most people in the body is a feeling of, you know, our trauma response is fight, flight, or flee, freeze. Fight, I was getting mixed up. Fight, flight, or freeze.
Right.
And so if you look at what people are doing, you can usually see a variation of one of those, or maybe several, because the frontal lobe goes offline and we can't really reason and feel like we can cognitively process what's going on because there's no solution, and so therefore we don't feel safe. And then our trauma response kicks in, and that's why you see so much reactivity and so much, you know, fighting in Costco and the road rage and the depression and the suicide rates and addiction. You know, it's skyrocketed. It's off the charts. So, you know, we really have to learn. So in answer to your question, what do I tell my clients? I explain that to them, and I explain that, you know, in order to get the body back, get the frontal lobe back online, and we have to get into present moment. Because if you come into present moment, you realize that even though there's all these other things happening in the world and all around you and in your life, and even if you can't pay your rent or whatever, if you look at, for five, I call it the Fantastic Five, find five things right now where you are that are safe and comfortable. So it could be the chair you're in, it could be your cat in your lap, it could be the smell of dinner cooking, the flowers blooming, the birds singing. And so you come back into present time and you breathe, breathe obviously, because we always take shallow breaths in trauma. And you just go, oh, yeah, okay, right, okay, there's safety here. And so then the body, it helps the body get back, get that frontal lobe back online. And then, you know, the other thing I do with them is I validate the feelings, because it's hard. That's the other thing that I've learned, you know, in my life's work is, and, you know, even the winding road I took that I was mentioning from the counselor telling me I wasn't smart enough that led me to these other degrees and these other careers, I got to be in the school system. I got to see schools. I got to see how all that operates. And I got to be in parent education and work with parents and be my, you know, be a parent myself. And all of those things really add to the layers of what I bring to my psychotherapy practice, which is what I call authenticity architects. And that's why, because when you look at the development of our social-emotional self and how many of us haven't really learned much about that, because this is brand-new stuff. We didn't understand social-emotional development until the last century, and not even until the end, the middle or end of the last century. All the years that we've been on the planet, this is brand new stuff. And so people don't know what they're feeling. They don't know what to do with their feelings. They don't know how to talk about their feelings. So I have exercises that I use with my clients for that. And then I also, I came up with the acronym PPEE, you know, how we talk about personal protective equipment for the health workers. I thought, well, we really need personal protective emotional equipment, don't we? And what would that be? So with the acronyms, I thought the first one is practice present moment, which is, like I said earlier, the Fantastic Five. And then, and permission to play, because when we're in play and laughter and fun and creativity, the nervous system actually relaxes, and we can actually create more neural connections in the right brain, which is our sensory safety side of the brain. Emotional side of the brain. And then E is excavate emotions, which is the excavation exercise, as I sort of talked about earlier, helping people excavate what they are feeling. And then the last E is to express it, express your emotions. So where's the safe person to talk to? Can you write it out? Can you draw it out? And so those are all the tools, not all, but some of the tools I've been using with my clients through all of this, and mainly just validating for people that this is hard. It's hard for everybody.
Right. And you're not alone either.
None of us.
Yeah, no. And, you know, like what I might be facing or you might be facing. There's other people out there that are going through the very same thing. You might not know them, but trust Patty and I, they are. It's the same thing. Do you notice sometimes, too, now that tempers flare? Well, of course, you're talking about riots and all of it. I mean, people change. I mean, you know, they go from some of them being so quiet and calm, and they turn into these, I don't want to say monsters, but they turn into something that, where did this come from? But isn't it pent up? I mean, isn't all of this pent up with them? I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but it's reasoning sometimes, too, that I think it's their way of getting through it. Maybe they have to use these emotions. Does that sound right? For me,
that's a fight.
You know what I do? When I'm working on the computer, I have my headphones on, listening to music, blasting. I mean, I love rock and roll. I came from Detroit, you know, Motown, all of that. I listen to all that. And I have a cat. And I think, and going back to pets, any kind of animal, they know if you're upset about something. All of them do. My cat, during the night, will come and lay on the pillow beside me and lick my face and then just lay there and breathe on me like, it's okay, Mom, I'm here. I'm here to protect you. He's a big cat. But he doesn't do it all the time. And so they are really sensitive. So if you're lucky enough to have a bird, a cat, goldfish or fish or something, a dog, something. I have hummingbirds outside, the most beautiful thing that there is. And look at them. And I have deer. I'm very lucky to have deer, a little, you know, the doe that come here. It's just amazing. They're so beautiful. And you're right, Patty. Go find things that you can smile about, like your five, whatever those five things are, because you're going to find something that's going to make you forget about, oh, God, I'm alone, or, God, I can't go to the store because this or that or whatever. I can't go browsing in Target or wherever. I can't go to lunch with my girlfriend. Girlfriends, I have two of them that I do lunch with, and there are other things you have to replace it with. Isn't that kind of right? You have to. I don't know how long this is going to go on, though. That's the thing that bothers me, is that people are going to be wound up like tops. And I don't. They have to release it. They have to find things to do. And I'm thinking about going back to my cross stitch. And I have umpteen books that I can read. Oh my goodness! I mean, everybody sends me a book. If I interview you, I get a book or something, you know. So I have lots of books. But I love music. That seems to be the best for me. I think you have to find something that really takes you away from it all, and you can just listen to this music and dance in the office, and that's what I do. I mean, so I think, isn't that true? You have to find something also that's going to take you away, that you can see these beautiful things, that it is going to be okay. It really is. But, it's a tough call. It's got to be tough on you listening to these people, and you can't give them a magic pill and say, well, here, take this. It's going to be good by tomorrow. You can't do that.
Well, a couple things. One, yes, it is, because, you know, a good therapist has empathy, and when you have empathy, you feel with the person. And so, yeah, by the end of the week, I'm pretty wiped out, but I feel like it's really important work, and I'm really grateful that I get to do it. As far as the music, I just want to say, you know, my third book just came out. It's called Shame-Informed Therapy, and it's a workbook for therapists. And what they found about shame, it's very much like trauma in terms of the neurobiology and how it gets set up in the nervous system. And Stephen Porges came up with what he calls polyvagal theory, which is how the nervous system has evolved through time into what is now known as a social engagement system, and how important it is for us to be in relationship and in physical connection with people,
mm-hmm.
in terms of emotional safety. And when that gets interrupted or ruptured, at which it does in many people's lives, you know, that's when we have these trauma responses. But he says that one of the most effective forms of sensory healing is music, prosodic sound, and rhythm.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
Anything that we can do, that's the other thing I always recommend, is find something that you can, some way you can feel safe in all five senses, you know, or at least one of the five. So music is listening, and then the rhythm of the, even poetry has prosodic rhythm. And it's something about how it calms the nervous system. So I'm the same way. I love music and dance. I'm fortunate in that I love music and dance and painting, and I, you know, I can just be creative, like, a lot. And so I was suggesting that to people, because a lot of people don't, because our left brain takes over and we have to be busy and we have to do things and we have to be productive. And all that's true to some degree. But when we cut out the art, the creative arts and play and laughter, mm-hmm. you know, we can't, it's harder to access a sense of calm in the body. So that's really important. And I think it's also important to embrace the paradox, because we were talking earlier about how you have to go through grief and you have to feel pain, you have to be able to tolerate pain. And I'm also talking about finding five fantastic things that are comfortable right now. And I think we tend to want to split those off as if you either have pain or you have comfort. But the truth is, it's always a paradox. We can always have both at the same time, and that is tricky for people to get. But it's one of the biggest lessons. So, and I think for me, the hard part for me, when I learned about how important gratitude is way back in the day, I thought, you know, well, I'm not going to be grateful for something unless I truly am grateful for something. But what I recognize now is, I wanted somebody to acknowledge my grief, and they weren't. So why should I be grateful when I'm not allowed to grieve? And so once I realized I can be grateful and grieve at the same time, voila, you know, that's the key. That's the harder, trickier part for us to get, because we always want to pick a side, don't we? We want it to be this or that, or one or the other.
Right.
And so embracing paradox and knowing that we can find these things that calm our nervous system, and at the same time be aware that there's going to be emotional pain and trauma and grief right now. There just is.
Right, and even if, like I do with my cat, I'll talk to him, and, I mean, he follows me around. Sometimes he drives me crazy because he has this sense like, oh, I got to follow Mom. I mean, I just got to be near her, right near her. And but I talk to him, and it makes me feel good. Because it's like he understands me, like his ears perk, and he's not smiling, of course, but he's just got this look about him. I know, Mom, I know what you're going through. I know, I'm here for you. And but you know, it's he'll talk. He'll go in the kitchen and he'll talk. Cats talk, and I'll say, well, what? I don't know what you're saying in there, and then he'll come running out, and in the morning he's so happy. I mean, he sleeps with me, but he's like the protector. He's like the guardian of the night for me. And he's a big cat, so he can do that and get away with it. But I think pets are really soothing, don't you think? I think because they can show you affection and you can talk to them, and they're not going to talk back. They're not going to say, oh, no, that's dumb. You can't do that. And of course, like you said, the music, I have my headset right here, and I plug it into my cell phone, that I've got everything you can imagine. I have all the Motown. I love Anita Baker. She's from Detroit. Her and all the rock stars, and not the latest ones, but the oldies. They don't make them like that. They don't make music like that anymore. So I love it. And you know what? You escape. I mean, I get on a high doing, I discussed this with somebody else when I do the magazine, because I just got done with it. It's like I'm doing all of this for all of you. I am promoting all of you. I've got your work, and I'm setting it up on the magazine, and then I send it back to the publicist, or sometimes the author will write to me. But I have my music on when I'm doing all of it, and it allows me not to think about anything else and not to worry. So, you know, you got to, I don't know, it's just tough. You have a tough job. That's all I can tell you. You have a very tough job. And in dealing with your own life.
I'm grateful that I get to be of service right now, because I feel like there's a huge need. And so all the winding paths that I took to get here, I'm very grateful. I do want to talk about pets for a minute, though, because I too have a cat, and she's definitely a healer kitty and hangs by me. And even she's got real soft fur, too. So even her soft fur, when we talk about sensory, is calming. Uh-huh. It's like velvet. She's so soft. But the thing about animals is, you know, you're right, they don't talk. And the thing about trauma and the early development of the emotional self is all nonverbal. So we know that the first 3 years of life is when the right brain develops the right brain develops before the left brain, and the first 3 years of life we know are crucial to create enough neural connections and pathways in the right brain that feel safe. Very different from intellectually knowing I'm safe. It's a sensory feeling of safety. So that's the piece that we haven't really explored enough and gotten mainstream enough to understand, because we're so left brain and linear and logical that we're trying to make sense out of things using our cognitive mind. And yet the real work is in the nonverbal, nonlinear, sensory side of the brain. And so animals, because they don't talk, how perfect is that, right? They show up feeling of unconditional love, and we feel it, and we don't have to argue with them about whether or not they love you or not. They're just there. And that's exactly very healing. Animals are extremely healing. Mm-hmm. And that's why many people would prefer a pet to a person.
Yeah, they're not going to cause you as much trouble. And, you know, like, his name is Muji, and I'll put him on Instagram a lot of times, and everybody just loves him, but he's my cat, and that's it. It's kind of like you walk in the door, he'll look at you and say, don't take your shoes off, don't plan on staying very long, this is my mom, this is my house. I'm not joking. That's how Maine Coons are. Oh, no. No, I mean, he puts up with my son when my son comes over, he puts up with him. Like, you know, it's like, don't get too close to my mom here. She belongs to me. But in a sense, it kind of makes you feel good, because here's this animal that loves you so much. Of course, you feed him and give him water and baby him and talk to him, and, you know, but it really is a wonderful feeling when they come and they rub against you, or they take their head and push against you. Oh, that's all signs of affection. All of that if I didn't have him, I would really be lost. You know, I'm really grateful that I have him here with me. And but isn't it strange? A person could drive you crazy. Maybe you're talking too much, or you're asking too much, or you're complaining too much. Cats don't, and dogs don't do that. They don't do that. They're like perfect.
I know.
Perfect little. They're your little friends. They're your companions. They love you. They don't expect that much, except that, like, for my cat, every time I have my food, he's right there with me. There's only certain things that he will eat. I don't give him much off. I give him his own food, you know, all the time. But it's really funny. I've noticed that with him the last, maybe the last year. But especially the signal for me is him coming on my pillow. I have a long one, and I have it to the side, so there's a lot of room. And he'll come tippy-toe, this big cat comes up, but he lets me know he's there. He kind of licks my face a little bit, Mom, I'm here. And then he lays down, and you can hear him kind of making their sounds, you know, he's breathing. Sometimes he breathes in my face, but it's comforting to know that he's there, because he knows something. And he can't tell me, but he can show me. And you know, you have one, you know what it's like. Dogs do the same thing. It's just, you know, birds, because, you know, I used to have a parrot. I had an African gray. Talk about a smart bird. But, of course, it wasn't like a cat. And the two of them got along, believe it or not. So those of you out there that be grateful if you have a pet with you, I think that's wonderful. And, you know, some of us end up staying home a lot. Like me, of course, I was pretty sick, so I was stuck here. But It took me a while to get better, but I'm back to normal. Thank you. Thank you, God. You know? And I made it through all that. But it's scary. The people are being, they're so afraid, aren't they, out there, Patty, that because they don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. I was like that. I have to say that. I was like that for a few days. I was worried. I kept thinking, well, gosh, maybe I'm going to get this. I'm going to die. You know? I mean, No, I don't want to do that. I talked to God right away. No. Mm-mm. I have too many things that I still want to do, although when your name is on the page, when the page turns, you can't change it. But I had that feeling. I don't know why. Isn't that kind of strange?
No, I'm sure we all are at some point because it's a possibility for every single one of us. I mean, and, you know, we have no idea. Of course, we know that, you know, people with other conditions are more compromised. But, you know, anyone could get it. Anybody could have it to various degrees. And so We have to not what if. And whenever, you know, we go into the what if, I get it. But to come back to the Fantastic Five, I don't have it now. And, you know, because if I do get it, I'll deal with it. But I don't have it now. And, you know, the what-if-ing is what comes up because, of course, there's so much uncertainty, and we humans like to be in control of our lives. Silly us that we think we have that much control, right? We don't.
Right.
And so we have to stay really present in the moment and, you know, the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I say that a lot with my clients because, you know, we can't control the virus right now. We can only control how we manage our own emotional life and our the rest of our life the best we can, but the things that we can't control, we have to let go and surrender and trust that things, you know, are going to be okay. And I think that's really hard for people because, you know,
like
Carolyn Mace is one of my favorite authors, and I saw her speak once, and she said, you know, we always
she's
get insurance.
She's from Michigan, I think. I saw her speak one time at a Unity church.
Chicago. Yeah. She's from Chicago. She's a medical intuitive, and she said, you know, we buy insurance for everything in our lives, but the one thing that's going to happen to us is the one thing that we don't have insurance for. You know, we try so hard to get all our ducks in a row and make sure, and which is good. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that when we're so focused on trying to control everything in our lives and then something like coronavirus happens, I mean, it happened with 9/11. We had a similar conversation about, wow, that was unexpected. And now this, which is a much more widespread, long-term, unexpected, unpredictable, unprecedented, you know, uncertain time. And so we're all being invited to go in. And actually, I have a course on my website that's free called Go In, Not Out. And when you were talking about going to Target earlier, I thought about one of the first slides in there. I wrote it when everybody here was quarantined. And I thought it would be a good thing for people to do, to take a look at how they can really look at their inner life a little bit more and go inward. And the first slide is, or one of the first slides is, I just want to go to Target. Because <You know? laughs> I had a couple of people say that, I just want to go to Target, you know. It's like we just want our lives, and we want to go walk around Target.
So funny. And I mentioned Target.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had a vertical root fracture, and I had to have some oral surgery. I couldn't eat then, like I couldn't just a few weeks ago. But I said to my son, you know what I want? He said, no. I said, I want McDonald's fries because I couldn't have anything. He said, oh, my God, why? Because I was tired of eating Jell-O and drinking. You have no idea how awful that is. And so, you know, he was like, he still reminds me. He says, well, are we going to get your fries? But it's true. I mean, some of the authors I got to know, and they were sending me, they were laughing. I just sit here thinking about, Natalie, did you finally get your fries? It's true. The things that you have to give up, you think about it, and like going to Target, just browsing, not buying, but browsing, walking around and picking up stuff. And, you know, thinking about, well, God, when this comes, I'll buy this for, like, I have a granddaughter. And that's what you do. But when you can't do that, that's awful. I mean, for a lot
it
of
is.
People, it's awful. It is, you know. Women like to browse. I'm sure some men like to browse, too, but especially women.
Yeah.
I would enjoy going to Target, getting my caramel macchiato at Starbucks. It's hot. And walking around with my friends, and just she'd go this way, I'd go that way, and just looking around. And sometimes you kind of daydream a little. Well, if I could just get that, or I don't want to get it because you know what it's like. You just walk around. Sometimes you leave with nothing. You don't have to have anything, but it's a nice feeling. And a lot of us are not able to do that. I mean, you can go there, but now you got to wear a mask.
I know, and I remember the first time I did when things started to open up, and I was afraid to touch things. You know, I was afraid. Somebody told me this week, one of my friends or something was saying they were at the bookstore, the Boulder bookstore, and if you pick up a book, you have to put it in a bin so it can
disinfect it.
Yeah. And so she said, I didn't even see the sign until after I touched about 50 different books.
I don't think they don't really know about that yet. That has to be an actual something on your hands after you either touched your nose, you sneezed, or something like that. And I'm not really buying that it's in the air. I think everybody needs to protect themselves until they find out more. Because you know what, Patty? They don't really know everything anyhow. They don't know. They really don't know.
Well, that's so unpredictable. And I think, again, that goes back to this I can't control. You know, there's so much we can't control here. And, you know, the tragedies about the schools. And, you know, I have a daughter who's a school psychologist and another daughter who's a high school teacher. And I was really worried about the school year, but luckily where they are, they're going to be online. And
yeah, my granddaughter also, she's going into the 11th grade. But her and I had a little talk, and I said, well, what do you think you want to do? She said, I'm not going to school. She said, it's going to be a mess. She said, they want us to stay in one room. The teachers are going to rotate. We have to have a lunch at our desk with a mask on. She says, do you have any idea what that's going to be like for all of these kids? It's going to be a mess. She says, it's a mess as it is. And so she said, and she did really well staying home from March, you know, her last part of her 10th grade. She did really well. So she said, it's fine for me. But not all kids do that. Sometimes, you know, what do you do with, I'm not going to ask you this, what do you do with smaller children who need that interaction with other children to learn? They have to learn things. They have to learn how to be, to share, to ask. They have to, you know, you and I don't need that. But they do to develop. What happens with them? How is it going to work? I don't know.
No, it's a really good question. Because, again, back to the early brain development and the sensory, emotional, you know, we know that the social emotional development is more important than the academics in preschool and early childhood. So, kids are really missing out on some really crucial need for peer interactions. And I don't know the answer. I think if people have small, you know, intimate play groups with people that they know, that they've, you know, sheltered in place together and they feel it's safe, I think that's ideal, is you have a handful of children in a neighborhood or something that get to play occasionally. And, you know, it's hard to teach them you have to wear your mask and you have to because we're instinctively wired to reach out and connect, and kids want to hug and they want to tumble and wrestle.
Of course.
And it's really, really, really tough. So I don't have the answers, but I don't think that school, personally, think that schools ought to be opening. I think they need to create some other. Well, there was a great article today. It was written by, I think, the Chicago, somebody writing for the Chicago Tribune about schools. You know, were pretty flawed before all this happened, and they really needed an overhaul anyway. So this is really some time time to start looking at, you know, and I didn't read it thoroughly because I was in a hurry and I want to go back. But one of the things I did notice was, you know, just what I learned in my early childhood degree was about whole language, you know, how we can learn every day. Like, and that's what I was telling parents at the end of the year last year when they were so worried about keeping up with the school curriculum. And I said, you know what, if you bake with your kids, you teach them cooperation, you teach them math, teach them all kinds of things. If you paint, let them paint, be creative, then you're helping them calm the nervous system. If you get outside and play, you know, but we don't value that. And we don't realize how much learning happens in, you know, just in life. I mean, if we could adapt, there's one school, Sudbury Valley model, that I was drawn to years ago because their model is kids go to school and there's a learning environment and they can choose what they want to learn. And these kids, the majority of them will graduate from fine colleges, but the learning curriculum is really about allowing the children to go towards what they're drawn to, and that's how they learn. And there's always learning opportunities in every single moment of the day. So I saw that in this article. It was similar to that, like, let's make learning practical. Let's find learning experiences, you know, in our day-to-day lives. And so, you know, I feel like the schools were so stressed. I mean, we had all those, remember all the school shootings that were going on before the pandemic?
I know. Oh, my gosh.
Thought about that, right?
Yep.
So, you know, what was happening then? We had some pretty angry kids because the schools were not meeting their needs. They weren't addressing what you need to learn optimally. And so here's an opportunity where everything's turned upside down to really take a look at what we can do. Now, as far as your question around the social emotional, you know, connections, again, I think the only solution I see is small play groups with people we know, just so there's some interaction with other children. But it's not, of course, that's not ideal, but, you know.
But I mean, you could, you know, you could all be someplace, so like you said, and all color or paint, draw. I mean, these kids have to be allowed to do that. Well, because what are they going to be like when they get older? I mean, they're just, those functions are so important. Even if they're not going to be Picasso, it doesn't matter. Let them paint. Let them color. Put a little apron on them. Let them have fun. Let them not be so, you know, the life isn't really good because they're listening to the parents. They need to do that. I think it's really, really important. Saturday I've got my granddaughter coming over for the day, and we're going to watch scary movies. She likes scary movies. And so we've been talking about it, you know, I'm going to have lunch for her and everything, and I'm looking so forward to it because she gets something from me that she doesn't get from her parents, although they're beautiful parents. My son is very much like I am. He's an empath. He's spiritual. But she gets something else, and I can't wait because, you know, she just gravitates to me. She loves me to read to her, believe it or not. And I, you know, I cherish that. And so I've got movies lined up that she can pick. There's one we're going to watch, we know for sure. And because it's a bond her and I have. And it's showing her something else. It's taking her out of her home, getting her here. If I'm lucky, I'll have her work in my office a little bit. You know, all the files need to be put in new folders. They're looking pretty ratty. You know, after all the years, you know what they're like. They get all frayed at the top and all of that. And maybe if I'm lucky, I'll have her do that. Or she'll do that for me. We'll work together. And I am so looking forward to it. Here she's, you know, she's 16. She's got her friends, and she's real smart. But I think that interaction with me is going to be helpful. I don't like her being home alone. I don't like her watching movies on her cell phone all the time. I think I'm going to try to get her to do it once a week. It's not going to hurt her, even if it's just a few hours, but she needs to get to some other place, and I can show her other things that she's not going to get at home. I know it. So she sees ghosts. I mean, she'll see things, and we'll talk about then, and she really, it's just wonderful. I'll just cherish these moments with her, and she'll remember too. You know, mm-hmm. She's creating memories, and that's what the little ones, they'll remember these little things. So all the little kids, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever age they are, you've got to create good things for them so that when they get older, they can look back and see all the beautiful things that happened to them and made them feel really good and help them to develop. That's what bothers me. I want them to be able to develop. I don't want to stifle any of them, you know, and what are you going to do? You got to make the adjustments, I guess, but you got to make it good for them when they're at home. If they have to be home, like you said, Patty, let them get into little groups once a week, twice a week, something, and get out the colors and the crayons and the paints and all of that stuff and let them have a good time and let them draw. And wouldn't it be fun to be invisible and watch these little kids doing all of this? I would love that, just to see what they would do. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying.
Mhm. Yeah, and kids are pretty adaptable. They're also pretty resilient. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to minimize my concerns about the social emotional development because mm-hmm. of restrictions of the relational connections that are so important. But I do think if we keep that in mind, like you said, you have that connection with your granddaughter, and that's important. I mean, we're all wired for connections. So wherever we can find connections with our families and, you know, in small groups outside the families, that I do think that's essential.
It really, really is. I mean, we've got to keep going. You know, when I went to the grocery store the last time, my son got out of the truck and he said, "Well, Mom, you're walking and talking." I said, "Yeah." That was our joke. You're walking and talking. You're mm-hmm. functioning. You're healthy. Right?
Sure.
And I'll look at him and I'll say, right. You know, and so you got to, and you know, and I have friends online that I'm pretty close to. One lady is listening right now, I know. And then there's a lot of the people, you know, I have like 30-some people that work on the site for me. And, you know, I know them. I know about their lives. I know what's going on for them. And there's just a little interaction like that. But it's nice to see people, you know, to actually see people is a good thing. But, you know, we got to do what we got to do. And like you said, we've got to see things that can make us feel, take us away from any kind of problem that we're facing. And like, you know, I can go outside and sit on my porch and listen to all the birds. And maybe if I'm lucky, a doe will come walking up to me. I mean, how beautiful is that? You probably have wild animals where you are, right?
I have 2 bald eagles right outside my back.
Oh, my gosh. They're magnificent. We have them here, but you don't see them that often.
They fly back and forth every night, and
I gasp. Isn't that wonderful?
Every
oh.
time I... Oh, gosh, it's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, the wingspan on them. I can't even remember what it is, but it's big.
It's big. And
yeah.
They're so... See their white heads. It's beautiful. Yeah, and that nature is so healing. And, yeah, like I was saying earlier, it's embracing the paradox that, you know, to be able to take in those moments and at the same time validate that, you know, this is hard for all of us. And we're going to get through it, but we have to go through it. We can't pretend that it isn't difficult. It is.
I know. And I want to tell everybody about your website. I want everybody to go to it and check it out, all this wonderful stuff that you have here. I've got to go back to home here now. I keep jumping around on your site here, so I keep losing everything. it's Patty, PattiAshley.com. And she's got courses and publications and a blog and how to contact her and do a one-on-one with her and a beautiful picture of her. She's very pretty there. And I'm just so honored that we were able to talk because it's a great topic. Look at how we kind of – I told you, I don't need questions. We'll just talk. I mean, we can all pull information from each other. And we went from cats to kids, right, to music.
We did.
We've been just going all over the place. But these are
the Motown. Don't
Motown. Oh, yeah, that's where I was raised, in Detroit. And at the time when Motown, you know, was real, I mean, it was all up and coming. All the artists were coming from there. And I went to beauty school in downtown Detroit. My girlfriend and I, we used to walk the streets of Detroit, Woodward, the Boulevard, just her and I. Never were bothered, not one time, not once. Mm. Was safe as you can imagine. And, you know, I went to high school in Detroit. So, things have changed. And hopefully some little tiny bit of it will come back the way it was. I mean, somehow it will evolve and the appreciation will be there. And, Patty, you are wonderful. You are doing such great work. I'm so glad you love what you do, and you're giving of yourself, of service. You know, we honor you, all the listeners and I honor you for that, because it's tough. It's tough helping all these people. Sometimes you just don't know what to say to them, I imagine, right?
Thank you. Don't you think it's going to be a paradigm shift? You know, everyone's talking about that, you know, a lot of the old systems are falling away and new things are coming in place. But there's always...
I like to say to people, I told my son, I said, it's almost like a comeuppance. The universe has said, okay, I'm changing things up here. It's change-up time. And I, you know, and he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, think about it. Everything has been about the money.
Yeah.
How much can I make? How much can I take from you? How much can you lose? How much can I make you do something and you lose? It's been all about the money. Now it's about the people. It's about the world. It's not about the money. And I think things are going to fall by the wayside. And people like ourselves are going to, the horizon will be there. I like to think of it like it's going to be just really nice and bright and shiny, and it's going to be wonderful. It's all of this is for a purpose. That's how I look at it. This wasn't an
accident. It wouldn't hurt to have a little bit more compassion and kindness on the planet right now. And if
that's right, that's exactly. It's about the people. You've got to take care of each other, love each other. I don't care if you're blue, black, or green. It doesn't matter. Look where I came from, Detroit. I have a lot of friends there. You know, you gotta do that. But you know, it's going to be tough for some. It's going to be very, very tough. You and I don't think so. I think it's going to be okay. But I want you to stay healthy. Keep doing that awesome work. I'll keep doing my thing. I'll keep putting beautiful stuff in the magazine and doing this, doing these interviews. I'm booked through till January now. And it's kind of amazing because there for a while, you know, I'd look at my appointment book and I'd say, oh, my God, I don't have anybody scheduled for this month. Now I don't know where to put everybody. But it's a wonderful thing because everybody wants their voice to be heard, and that's what I want them to do. I want their voice to be heard, and I think it's a great avenue. It's a great thing to be able to do that. I really do. So I thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, maybe sometime we'll do this again. And, it's been awesome and a perfect topic for a perfect time. And I'm going to say goodnight to everybody. And as I always end my show, you're going to like this, Patty. Believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. Good night, everyone. Good night, Patty. You're wonderful.
Good night, Natalie. So are you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If everyone could be who they were really meant to be, without limitations, discrimination, this world could show all of